Hi, this is Paul Warren, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey with you along today. Jason was scheduled to be with you, but unfortunately, he's had some work commitments, so you're stuck with me. But you're not just stuck with me alone, because who would want to listen to me gab on about Derby? So I've got an expert in, someone who knows hopefully a little bit more about Derby than I do, and that's Chris Smith, regular on the podcast. And we also, Chris, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, fine. Thanks, Corey. And yeah, as always, thanks a lot for inviting me on.
And Chris, me and you are going to be doing a duet for right now, but not for long, because Ollie from the Derby County blog will be joining us momentarily, and we'll bring him in when we start the discussion. Chris, I want to start with the table, because we talked a couple of weeks ago, and maybe I was a little bit doom-mongering. Okay, I'll say that. I was a little bit doom-mongering. We were sitting here talking about, you know, the start to the season wasn't great. You know, we were kind of struggling. I don't think, you know, it was around the time of the floods and everything like that that hit, we're all kind of feeling a little bit underwater. But you look at the league table now, just a few weeks later, Derby are in the playoffs, 18 games played. We've got, you know, a couple games in hand, as do most teams ahead of us as well. But it's not all doom and gloom now, is it, Chris? We're 4 unbeaten, and we know that we've also not played our best football. How are you feeling right now, where the Rams currently sit in sixth place?
Yeah, I don't think you're on your own in sort of doom mongering at all. I mean, it was, I think it was kind of probably from that weird vote of confidence, that anonymous vote of confidence that came out from the club. Things have obviously changed. I think we had a few kind fixtures around, to be fair, as well. But yeah, I mean, I think the general consensus from last night, and I've tweeted it out myself, is that, you know, you look at the season overall, it's been generally underwhelming. I think there's been some highs, definitely, but I think it's been largely underwhelming. The football has been underwhelming. I think there's a general acceptance that the manager's not a good fit for the club. But I think what's happened is that, you know, as you know, results talk. You know, there's no two ways about it. And whatever you think of Warren and his philosophy and his style of football and his post-match interviews and his recruitment and all of that normal stuff that we talk about, four wins on the spin. And, you know, I think generally, again, I'm not saying anything you don't know here or that nobody said before, but I think we can all agree the league this year isn't as strong as last year. There's no Ipswich, there's no Chef Wed, there's no Plymouth, there's nobody I'm seeing there who is going to motor to 110 points. So, yeah, we find ourselves 6 points off the top with, as I say, a largely underwhelming season so far, and also playing pretty much with no strikers. You know, again, people would argue Collins has, I don't know how many he's got, 7, 10 goals. Waggy's got 6, 3 of them obviously in one game. But, you know, I think we could all agree we've pretty much not got a lot going forward. And I think none of us would like to look at this season without Mendes Lang. So, yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, you've got to take the positives. And last night was, again, the away form kind of seems to have dropped off while the home form has picked up. And so an away win there is good. And if they certainly go to Orient and get something, then, you know, it's starting to look quite good.
Yeah. And Chris, it obviously shows that you've been reading our tweets this week, as you have obviously are always peeled to our thing. But Paul Warren did say that he's more respectful of the league, but he thinks the best teams aren't as good as they've been in recent years. And he includes Derby as one of those. And he thinks their middle 12 teams are virtually all the same, but there aren't any outright wow or amazing teams. And I think, you know, when you look at the team, when you look at the league, and as you just said right there, you know, obviously he's right in his assessment that there's nobody in this league that we're sitting here going, well, bang on for the championship. I mean, I think for a neutral perspective, it's a pretty wide open league, which makes it fascinating for a neutral perspective, because there's probably what, one of, you know, a couple of, at least two of 10 teams that could go up automatically. There are probably, you know, any four of any 18 clubs that could probably make the playoffs and have a chance once you get into the playoffs to really kind of make a run. And I think, you know, from my perspective, wins are wins. You have to get wins how you get them. And I heard something very interesting the other day, Chris, from the Premier League on an international commentary. And they were saying that, you know, essentially, when you look at a season, a team's not going to show up and play amazing every game of the season. That's just not going to happen. You have maybe 10 games of the season where you're outstanding. And then the other rest of the games, you're kind of just like, let's just get through this. Let's get a victory or a draw and get a point on the board. And to be honest with you, you know, we are in a relatively good position. Obviously, you know, I know we've got the two games in hand on Stevenage in fourth, 3 points behind them. And the other, you know, obviously Peterborough have played a game more, but Oxford, Portsmouth and Bolton all have played 18 as well. But, you know, we've got them to play. We've got Portsmouth to play twice. And so there's points there to be taken. And I think, you know, we've not played our best football. We know that there's more to come for this team. So, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago, and I maybe sounded a little bit more doom mongering than what I normally do. I'm a little bit more buoyed by the fact that, you know, we're not even playing to our strengths yet. We know that there is more to come from almost every single player on that field, probably bar Mendes Lang. We know that every single player can up their game at some point and can really turn it on. And sitting in sixth in the playoffs, I mean, still not a bad thing. You look at the, we sit here and we say, oh, we've had a poor season. We've had a poor season. We're literally 6 points off the top. So if that's a poor season, what are other clubs saying, which would be a good season? So maybe it's, I'm not going to say necessarily expectation management, but, you know, there's a lot of the season to play here. There's a lot of points up for grabs. And I think, you know, we're in a good position and a good foundation to finally build on. Four wins on the bounce is not to be sniffed at in any division, let alone in this one. And we need to get points on the board as soon as possible. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Bolton have actually done what we're doing now, haven't they? Because I think, again, if you go back probably 5-6 weeks, obviously Oxford and Pompey were the early front runners. Bolton were kind of probably about where we are now, you know, again, not sort of having a disaster as such, but certainly not setting the league on fire. And then I don't know what they're on now, but I think they've won 5 or 6 on the spin, and now they're top, you know. And Oxford have obviously been nuked with
Manning's departure.
Yeah, exactly. So again, you know, I'm early days for the new guy, but let's assume that best case they've been knocked off course a little bit, and you know, that's going to take a bit of doing. And you'd like to think as well that moving forward, this is where and I don't know if you're planning on to specifically talk about this, but this January recruitment is going to be pretty pivotal, I think. And with some of the players that we've got, some of the players that, you know, we haven't signed yet, so we only have two loan players, you know, you'd like to think, well, David Clough literally said when the vote of confidence day, didn't he, that there's money to spend in January. And, you know, again, now people are starting to get fit. You look at our bench for, you know, well, for a number of years now has been very weak. Now it looks very strong. And you just think, you know, we're like, there are teams there who have no doubt have got a good first team. But then when you get into these like runs of games and people get suspended, people get injured, people get tired, you know, that is where we really could come through. And as I say, you know, it's some of these home games as well, you know, Northampton at the time, I mean, Northampton were woeful when we played them, and yet their last night, they, you know, they go and win at Blackpool. Barnsley, I know they're not in the top six, but I think we'd all have had them, won the first game of the season 7-0. You would have always had them as tricky opposition. You know, I mean, I don't think they were any better than Northampton and Exeter when we played them. So, you know, if we're getting into a bit of a, you know, a kind of a stride of wiping people out at home, then that's definitely a good thing to do, because that clearly was what was killing us early in the season. And again, if you're winning all your home games, then, you know, you've only got to, you know, be drawing and winning away from home, you know, alternate weeks, and you're really in business, aren't you?
You are, and Barnsley obviously scored that bizarre goal last night against Wickham, where the player kind of hit the goalkeeper and he went down theatrically and threw the ball and the thing. That's just bizarre, but that's League One football for you. Mm. But, you know, Chris, you raise an interesting point there about the subs bench. I'm looking yesterday, who was on the bench? Bradley, Barkhausen, Sibley, John Jules, Waghorn, Ward, and obviously goalkeeper and Vickers.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is something that let us down last year, is that when we were playing, you know, when we had played 35, when we had played 40 games, we're looking on the bench, like who's going to be coming on? And we didn't really have people. And it hurt us. It hurt us drastically. Warren couldn't take people out of the firing line to maybe get them a bit of form or somebody with a bit of competition. You know, we have genuine competition from most places on the field. We're going to talk about a position that we don't. Momentarily, but you know that's going to be the impact having that.
Corey, the last two games, case in point. Saturday, we do our best to throw it away against Bristol Rovers. Tyrese Fauner comes up. Well, in fact, I'd argue Tyrese Fauner had a big part in the first goal because he was hairing into the box, and nobody does that. We don't have a midfielder in the club who runs past the striker since Jason Knight left. And Fauner's energy in the box, the guy puts it in his own net, and then obviously Fauner assists for the winning goal. And then obviously JJ's, you know, goal last night. I mean, they're the sort of things that, again, from Warren's point of view, it's manna from heaven for him. You know, as I say, he's, you know, he's not running with a lot of goodwill in the tank. And, you know, so when he's doing things like that and things work, it's, you know, obviously it's great for him because, you know, it's just building up his credit. And, you know, and again, it's one of those things, I think that, talking of Warren and this sort of run that we're on, and you know, I had a couple of conversations with people recently, and I probably harshly said it at the top of the show that you know we all kind of accept that maybe he's not our guy long term. But I think what I have noticed is that once, you know, and I went to some of those toxic away games where people are singing him out, openly singing him out, not, and it's not nice. And you know, obviously we all saw the interviews where he looked a bit broken, didn't he, after a couple of those away games. But I think after the vote of confidence, I think everyone sort of, there was a general, once we kind of knew he wasn't getting sacked, everyone's thinking, oh, come on, let's sack him, get rid of him. Come on, let's get Steve McLaren back, get the band back together, or, you know, whatever, you know, but I think once everyone realized that wasn't happening, and then obviously we won a couple of home games, and I think sort of, as I say, there's this general kind of, I've sensed, and I'd almost, if I'm being honest, I've probably gone that way myself, this bit of like, well, you know, if we're not sacking him, we might as well back him, because there's no point going to the game and abusing your manager because he's just not going to help, you know. So, and then obviously we've won games. And then what's also you're seeing now is we're winning games, but also what you're seeing is then a bit of confidence coming into play and little partnerships coming into play and people starting to get fit. Kane Wilson, you know, he is now, looks a bit, looks fit, looks a bit lighter, had a couple of good cameos, getting more game time. Now everyone, you know, the internet's full of everyone's like, what a player he is. You know, great. We haven't had a dribbler for since I don't know when, but, you know, so it's great. And, you know, Aaron Cashin, you know, I would say been really poor this season. You know, I don't think, you know, the Brighton thing, I don't know if these things affect footballers. They must do, footballers. They must do, but he has been a shadow of himself this season as far as I'm concerned. But I don't know, you know, these last sort of 5-6 games, he's just getting better and better. You can see his partnership with Nelson, who's kind of a goes about his business, you know, in a nice kind of quiet, does his thing, and they're forming a really strong partnership. And I think I even read today it says we've got the best defense in the league now. I might have made that up, but I'm sure I saw that somewhere. But yeah, I mean, Cashin was monumental last night, back to his old kind of self against the, you know, two, and he played well against two super tricky customers, Chris Martin on Saturday, and obviously Ike Pazu yesterday, who two monumentally physical and experienced players. And he was brilliant last night, Cashin, and he was good on Saturday against Chrissy as well. So, so yeah, you know, I think, as I say, there is little green shoots coming everywhere, and you know, it's just wins breed confidence, don't they?
They do, and it's rather exciting that we can, you know, have a positive conversation. And Chris, you are right. Derby have conceded just the 16 goals this season. That is tied with the lowest total in the league with Portsmouth. So well done on statistician Chris there. Yeah. You should have been at work, Chris, but I'm not going to tell anybody that you were looking up stats to prepare. That's okay. But yeah, you know, when you look at the green shoots starting to do, wins improve confidence. Confidence helps players. They're going to get on more. And it's the same thing when you go to your job as well, right? There's just days that your team members are probably off, and there's just times when you're on and you're clicking and you have that high productivity team for a short amount of time. And high productivity teams don't tend to last for an extended period of time, such as a football season, but they can go for 4 or 5 or 6 games. And then that's where you need to kind of pick up those victories. Let's talk about, Chris, because we talked about the goals against. Let's talk about the goals for, because Derby have 31 goals for, but it's not, you know, near the top of the league. And one position of concern, I think, that is starting to arise here. Paul Warren said this in interviews, and I think it's raised its ugly head again with Connor Washington's debacle, the need for a striker. And for those that maybe have missed it, Connor Washington will be out for a few months, picking up ankle ligament damage while in Ireland duty with Northern Ireland. Derby didn't want him to go play for Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland stepped in and were like, well, you can't stop us. Derby said he wasn't fit. They played him when he supposedly wasn't fit, damaged ankle ligaments. He's going to be out for a couple of months. Chris, Paul Warren's talked about the need for a striker to come in. And I'm not going to base it off of one game, because it would be difficult to say, well, Tyrese John-Jules is back, and I understand he got the winner, and that's fantastic. I can only go off of his record, where he's not really been effective the entire season. So, Connor Washington, we needed a striker in any way. Does Connor Washington's injury now change it? Do we need two strikers? How do we fix the goals so we're not overly reliant on one player, Mendes Lang, as we were last season with David McGoldrick?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not sure the Washington injury changes the picture at all, Corey, to be fair. I mean, I think that, to my mind, we've needed a striker all season. You know, certainly, I mean, we've needed a striker. I think we've needed a number 10. I think we need another winger. You know, I think you could sign 3 forward players or creative players in any of those positions at least, and I don't think you'd be over egging the pudding. You know, people come in and out of form, people obviously get injured. I mean, John Jules last night, as you say, brilliant, but can we keep him on the pitch? You know, certainly what we can't be doing is overplaying him. So, you know, Waggy obviously is at a certain stage of his career. He may come back and do something, but needs legs around him. Collins has probably played more minutes than any of them. I think we're all fully aware of his strengths and limitations. So, we need some pace, I think. Without the bit that Washington did do, that I've said on here before, that nobody else up front does, is that running in behind thing and turning the defenders around. Now, JJ may have that. I don't, you know, obviously we haven't seen enough of him as yet. You know, he's obviously, you know, got some legs on him, but there's just with every respect in the world to him, and we're all kind of, you know, I don't think there's any doubt about his ability, but we just don't know if we can keep him on the pitch. And until he strings, he's probably one of those players where you probably wouldn't trust him until he's done a season, never mind, you know, 2 games. So to my mind, I think at least one centre forward, if not 2, probably another wide man. I think that we've got loads going on down the right wing, not a lot going on down the left. I think, you know, I think Callum Elder is rapidly becoming a bit of a non-playable character. I'm not even sure if he's like, I don't even know if the club have like invented him, because it's too weird that we signed 3 right backs and 1 left back. So I think they've cut, or no left backs perhaps. And I think they maybe just invented him just as this imaginary character.
Yeah, like, hey, we just checked the box. We've got this guy. And then
we've got a left back. Yeah,
we signed a left back. Off the face of the earth. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we signed 3 right backs. No, we signed a left back. We did, honestly. Yeah, so
he was like, here. What?
Yeah. So yeah, he's kind of just. So I don't know what's going on with him, but you know, a left-sided player. I mean, a left-sided sort of Joe Ward or Kane Wilson, who can play attacking left wing or left wing back, would be great. Because again, with Foz is great at left back. He played well last night, by the way. But obviously he can drop left side centre back. He can play left wing back. But I think a sort of a Kane Wilson type player who can play on the left, who could do that sort of left wing back, attacking left side would be good. And then Mendes, you know, flip flat with Mendes. I mean, Barkhuizen flatters to deceive a little bit. I mean, I like him, and I just wish he had more end product. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if he left in January either. I don't know. He just doesn't strike me as Warren's favourite. I don't know what you think, but I just get the vibe that he's not Warren's favourite, and he's out of contract, and it just wouldn't surprise me if he left in January, Barkhuizen.
Yeah, Chris. I mean, I was just about to say flattered to deceive when you were talking about Tom Barkhuizen. Yeah. And, you know, he was a player when we signed him last season, I was incredibly excited for, because, you know, with my dad being a Blackpool fan, you hear about these players coming through, and he was very good for Blackpool. He was very steady for Preston. And I'm thinking, wow, he's coming in here. Yeah, obviously he's a couple years older, but he's dropping down a league. I mean, he's not, you know, old. He's still 20, what, 28, 29, 28, something like that, maybe 30. And I'm thinking, this guy's got something. And he was one of the players that most excited me. And I think flattered to deceive is, you called it right there. I just want to see more of him. I want to see more out of him. And I really, honestly, if you said to me right now, what does he bring to the football club? I probably couldn't tell you. You know, I would like to see obviously more goal involvements with assists and goals and crosses and things like that. But yeah, you're right. It just flatters to deceive. And I could definitely see him. I could definitely see him going in January as one of the players. I'm sure that he's on a decent wage packet. I don't know, but that's the assumption coming from a championship club. Maybe it frees up a wages to find the next Kane Wilson or something like that, or a lower player in terms of like trying to be demeaning, but a player from a club at a lower division that comes up that's a little bit hungrier and a little bit younger. And you raise an interesting question here, because you were talking about three right backs and no real kind of attacking left backs. Let me ask you a question, Chris. How do you feel about playing an inverted fullback then on the left side? You know, you have Kane Wilson. We have Joe Ward. We know Ryan Niamey's made the right back position his own. What about putting Kane Wilson, because if he's got that silky dribbling skills, right, you probably couldn't put Joe Ward there because crossing it with his left foot might be a bit difficult unless he comes back and touch it with the right. But let's just say, for the sake of an argument, inverted fullback, either Kane Wilson or Joe Ward at left back. Thoughts?
Maybe. I think I've seen this mooted before. I'm not sure. I think inverted fullbacks are different to inverted wingers, if I'm being honest. I think inverted wingers, obviously, Messi being the obvious example. But yeah, inverted wingers, and even Mendes Lang does it, doesn't he? This thing of, you know, where you cut inside and you curl it for the far post. You know, when you're an attacking player, I think that's fine. I think the fullbacks are a little bit different, because one of the things, if you've seen Wilson, his kind of thing, you know, he loves that getting half a yard and just popping it to the back stick, doesn't he? Again, more power to having somebody who actually attacks the ball when we put these great balls in. You know, and again, you know, the amount, well versed, you know, the amount of crosses that go in the box is wild, isn't it? And nobody gets on the end of them, but digress. But yeah, I'm not sure I'm having Kane Wilson, inverted fullback, not as a left back. I just think you can't beat that thing where, you know, kind of somebody goes down the line, gets stuck in the corner, turns around, rolls it back. And this is why Sibley was good when he played there, because, you know, again, defensively, yeah, okay, but certainly what he was a natural left footer, where that he could back up the winger or get a ball hit wide to him, and he could just thrash that ball straight into the box with his, you know, his correct kicking foot and get that ball curling into the area. So, yeah, you know, I think inverted left back is all right for, you know, kind of a game or if somebody's suspended or, you know, or whatever. But I don't think I'm having it for, you know, a full season.
Fair enough. I just thought I'd throw that out there as a random tactical question for you, Chris. Yeah. Let's talk about, you talked about the need for another winger. Let's talk about a very informed player, the guy who's probably, I wouldn't say carrying us at the moment, but I'll say that he's carrying us at the moment. That is Guatemalan international Nathaniel Mendes Lang, if I could say that properly. The thing that worries me, Chris, is the workload management of Mendes Lang, because last season he fizzled greatly in, I want to say the final, I'm not going to say the final third, but that after Easter kind of part of the season, he really kind of fizzled. And my concern is the workload of then having to play for Guatemala for the internationals. It's travel. It's an extra, let's say, anywhere between 5 to 8 games that he's played with training sessions and traveling and things like that. And I'm glad that he's in form and whatever, but I think you're right. I think getting an extra winger in there that can help spell Mendes Lang with the workload management to manage his workload, I think will be key, because while everything's going well now, we need to maintain it. And I think it's going to be difficult to ask Mendes Lang to continue to play at this level for the rest of the season. I mean, look at David McGoldrick the last few games. You know, I'm not going to say he went cold, but he wasn't as effective as what he was previously. And at that point, it was like, well, we built the team around this guy. If he's not scoring, no one else will. And I think you're right. I think getting another winger in, obviously attacking players are going to be great, but just to spell Mendes Lang occasionally where he can play 60 minutes or he can come off the bench for half an hour or he can miss a week and then we can continue to play him and manage him after the course of the season, I think is what's important. Wouldn't you think, Chris?
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, some of that is the basis of what I was saying about Barkhuizen earlier. So what that period at the end of last season you're talking about there, which I think was even before he started playing for Guatemala, he was clearly on his arse. Yeah, he kind of lost his confidence a little bit from that kind of West Ham Cup game where he got pocketed a bit, and he seemed to sort of lose his mojo a little bit after that. There was a period there where he was clearly struggling and he just needed, you know, it was obvious to everyone. And I think a combination of the fact that, you know, Warne literally loves him, doesn't he? And, you know, Warne's refusal to pull him out and replace him just showed to me, you know, and there's definitely an element of Warne loves Mendes Lang in this as well, but he just didn't trust Barkhuizen. And, you know, Warne mismanaged Mendes Lang massively last season. But I do agree with you that kind of whilst he is on fire at the moment, you know, at some point teams are going to find him out and mark him out of a game. And he is a confidence player. And also, if you're getting tightly marked, you get kicked and, you know, it'll get knocks. What we can't do is what we did last season. So if he does get a knock or he gets a tight calf or whatever, you know, the guy's a machine, isn't he? So he's like a racehorse. So, you know, if he's 98% fit, he's not fit, you know. So I think, yeah, I agree with you 200% with that. You know, we need somebody where we can kind of give Nat a rest and not be sitting there going, oh. not be disappointed that we've got, you know, a made-up left-back on the... a regen left back wearing number 11.
And Chris, it's the same thing with Tyrese Jean-Jules. I know, obviously, he scored the goal last night and fantastic for the lad to score with his first touch. And I'm sure it's an immense confidence boost for him. But we have to, again, manage his workload. We can't sit there and be like, well, he's the hot hand. We're just going to play him until the legs drop off him. Like, we have to sit here and go, we need a warm body to be able to play this position. Yeah. And I'm not thinking, you know, November 29th, I'm thinking Christmas, I'm thinking New Year, I'm thinking, as Billy Davis said, men in the boys time, right? That Easter window, that's when we need to have, that's when you can really make some ground up in the league. Obviously, this all helps you set up that base, but that's when everything kind of turns up a gear, when you really need to be fit and firing. And, you know, it's about workload management. You know, you look at the midfield, we have a couple of players, you know, we've got basically 4 midfielders that we can rotate in and out with Bird, Forna, Hurahan, and you know, obviously there's options in there. There's options at the back with Cash and Nelson, Bradley. Mm. Like, you can play some sort of, you can shake it up and do it. But when you look at the wings and you look up front, that sharp end of the spear for Derby's attack, that's where it's kind of like, we need to get some people in. We need to get a couple of strikers in. We need to get, you know, a winger. And that's probably where, for me, the Connor Washington injury kind of hurts, because like you said, he is that, he's that quick guy. He's that pressing guy. And I know that we're not fans of sitting here going, you know, square pegs, round holes, but you could pop Washington out on the wing for 20 minutes because he can chase and do what a winger would do, essentially, because you don't really want a goal threat from him anyway, at end of the game, if you're just trying to press or defend or something like that. And he can be that kind of guy. And, you know, obviously in League One teams, we've got restricted budgets, so you have to make different pieces work. And that's where that Washington injury kind of hurts, because not only is he going to be out for 2 or 3 months, it's going to take 3 or 4 weeks for him to get match fit again. And then we have the ramp up period. And then by that time, we're looking at, it's Easter time by the time he's fit and firing, and then you have a whole different thing. So I think that this January period, like it was last year, is going to be so immensely important for us. We have the new academy. We have the new technical director in, the head of scouting, Mark Thomas from Oxford. You know, he's been in now. This will be his second window, so he'll have a little bit more time to bed in under that. And I think it's a massive window for Paul Warren, as it is for all coaches. But I think based off of it, the fact that his January recruitment last season really let the football club down and was, I'm not going to say the main reason, but was one of the reasons why we probably ran out of steam on the last few games of the season and ultimately missed the playoffs. This is massively important. If we have the budget that we believe that we have to be able to get players in that can not only fill the positions of need, but are also going to make an impact and stay fit. And someone like Tyrese John-Jules, he got the winner last night. But if his loan finished tomorrow, would I consider it a success? No. Yes, he won us 3 points, as did Tony Springett. Tony Springett won us 3 points at Port Vale last year when he kept that ball in. But I wouldn't necessarily call his loan still a success because he didn't really do anything other than that one moment, you know. And I want loan players to be a little bit more consistent with trying to chip in with things or at least playing a little bit more. So, you know, this is going to be immensely, immensely important January for Paul Warren. So, Chris, we just talked a little bit about, you know, what we want to see come in the window in January and how important it is for Derby to get some squad depth. And you talked a little bit earlier about Tom Barkhuizen being potentially a player that you think might be out the door in January. Let's talk about a couple of other players that have been in the back of my mind recently, and that's Aaron Cashin and Max Bird. We know that there have been bids turned down for both of those players late in the summer window. We also heard this week that their contracts, they're in talks to extend their contracts. There is an option in Cashin's contract in the club's favor to extend, which will obviously help his sell on value. Do you see either one of them remaining with Derby, or do you see them both, one or both, departing the thing? Or is it a situation, you know, in our last episode, Ryan Conway was talking about how it might be a whole, we'll just hold them until the end of the season because they might get us up. And if they get us up, then we'll keep them. And if they don't get us up, then thank you very much for your service. We'll see you later. And anybody else that on your mind that you could see leaving the football club, or that we could afford to let leave the football club with the numbers that we have.
So I think the Cashin kind of option is a definite plot twist, isn't it? So that's completely changed the narrative, I think, around that. I mean, the way that Brighton kind of penny pinched over the original bid, I think we were all expecting them to come in and, you know, kind of offer something derisory in January that we'd probably have to take. I think there's a line, isn't there, with the bid where you can kind of say, well, you know, so if you take that as an example, so Max Bird, so with Cashin, I think if Brighton come back with the same $4.5 million bid that they did in the summer window, then I think he's gone. You know, I just don't see how we can turn that money down at the level we're at, you know. And so I think if they come back with a bid of that sort of order, he's gone. I think with Max, tricky one, because it depends what comes in for him. So, you know, kind of, and also it depends what vibes you kind of get from him as well. So if somebody comes in, you know, with a 300, 400 grand, or, well, to be honest, if someone comes in with less than a million for Bird, then, you know, there's a strong argument to say there's no point selling him. He's worth more to us to get us up. And then in the summer, in the Championship, he might decide to stay. And if he goes, well, he got us up and, you know, who cares? So I think it'll be interesting with that one. I think with Max, I think there definitely will be that kind of thinking that, you know, Ryan was referring to. So you know, what that ceiling or line is, you know, who knows? So we'll have to see there. I think any of those Rossini signings, so I would say all of those Rossini, that first round of Rossini signings, you know, kind of, I think it's reasonably public domain now. They're all on decent money because obviously most of them came from the Championship. You know, we signed that team in short order, so we weren't really in a position to negotiate harder, don't guess. So I think any of those Rossini signings could leave. So, you know, because I think they're all on big money. And I think if someone came in for Collins, you know, I don't think he's the sort of player where we would kill ourselves to keep him. I think Sonny Bradley might be an interesting one because he's obviously going to want to play football. It'd be interesting if someone came in for a loan bid for him because let's assume he's not underpaid. Yeah, and I think that, and again, a wild card, I wouldn't even rule out, you know, it'd be pretty kind of left field, but, you know, would somebody look at someone like Hourihan with his numbers and his stats and his quality of delivery? You know, if you've got a kind of a data-driven, you know, functional, let's call it, team in the Championship, and you've got a player, you know, who you can get for relatively not a lot of money, it's that quality of set piece, somebody might take a view on that, you know. So I don't think anything's off the table. I don't think there's a single player in the entire squad who, you know, kind of you would be that bothered if they left, you know. So yeah, you know, and it'll be interesting. And I mean, the flip of this clearly is that we've just got to hope and pray that, you know, you reference Mark Thomas, you reference the previous windows. I think that last January, I would be kind of explicit and say last January absolutely cost us the playoffs. It was a disaster, you know, not replacing, you know, we've spoken about it a million times, but not replacing Dobbin and Asula was catastrophic. You know, and I don't think this summer's recruitment, you know, there's definitely a couple who have come out okay, but you know, this summer's recruitment really, was it all that? You know, I mean, we signed 9 or 10 players. I think it's 50-50 hits and misses, you know, and I'm being generous with that, I think. So yeah, you know, I think the pressure's on and January notoriously is challenging, but what you would also like to see is what we don't want is you know, be scrambling around at 5 to midnight at the end of January because there's a lot of games in January, you know. So what you really want to be doing is saying right, first week, oh, and here's our new loan signing who Liverpool have just recalled because he scored 15 goals for Stockport and now he's signed for us. Well, great, you know, all those deals sort of things should be like, I made that up by the way, I'm not referring to anyone specific, but you know, those sort of things, you know. So if you think about when we, in fact, we did do that with Bamford, it's where Bamford was killing it for MK Dons and you know, we pulled him off them at the window because his parent club wanted, Chelsea wanted him to step up a level. So you know, that you'd like to think we've got a few of those lined up. I bet we haven't, but you know, you'd like to sort of manifest it. And again, I keep saying about these loan things, you know, Warren goes, he doesn't like first time loans. Well, they're the sort of ones that maybe let's get knocking on the door of somebody
That's what
who's
you're going
doing
to get
well.
in League One, though. You know, when you're in the Championship, you're going to get the top prospects, right? You're going to get the Mason Mounts, the Fakayo Tomoris, the Harry Wilsons, the top academy prospects, because you're challenging to get to the Premier League and these Premier League teams want to see it. When you're in League One, you are going to get Will Asula, you're going to get Lewis Dobbin, who either had a loan spell at, you know, a non-league side or a non-league north side. And it's their first kind of football league kind of loan, or it's going to be their first ever loan ever. And they're going to have to grow up very quickly. So in League One, to get the loan signings, you're not going to get those marquee kind of guys that can come in and step in. Like Blackburn Rovers got Harvey Elliott a couple of seasons ago. We're not going to get a Harvey Elliott player that's on the borderline of like, well, this guy could probably start for a lower. Like we're in League One, and that's just the nature of the beast. So, you know, you're having to rely, Chris, like you said, on Mark Thomas. You're having to rely on the people and thinking, God, I hope really want they watched enough under 21 games at Spurs to try to find us a guy so that we can make it fit, because it's a very physical league, it's a very demanding league, and in the position that Derby's in, we don't really have the time or whatever to sit there and take four or five games to ramp them up, because then you're looking at mid-February, March, and the season may have gone by then, or the complexion may have looked very different. And I'm not going to say they have to sit in and hit the ground running, you know, like Khalifa Cisse did for that one magnificent game. I know it wasn't a loan sign-in, but, you know, you can't sit in there, but you also have to sit there. Again, the load management, you have to make sure you can bring him in the right way, not just chuck him in and then not see him again. I mean, I remember Chris, and again, it wasn't a young player, but I remember Nuno Tavares at Arsenal, and they played at the City Ground against Forest, and Forest beat him. And then you didn't see Nuno Tavares for like 18 months. He just never appeared again, because he was just ripped a new one. And that's the problem with, you know, you could get a player in that he just disappears, and you're like, oh, like a Callum Elder, like he's here. He's got a peg in the locker room, but we don't know where he is. But we think he is here somewhere, like he's creeping about somewhere, whatever. So it is going to be an extremely important window. And Chris, like you said there, with the signings that we had made the previous summer under Rossini, a lot of those players are out of contract. I think off the top of my head, there might be, what, 12 to 14 players that might be out of contract next summer. Yeah. So, you know, unless we start getting some contract extensions or getting players in for the long term in January or something like that, we're going to have to do a rebuild job again. And we could be in one league or another. And either way, it's going to be really difficult when you have to do a scattergun kind of approach. So, you know, I'm always a sucker for transfers. I like transfer rumors. I like looking players up on FIFA stats, because that's obviously the most accurate way you can tell how good a player is. If, like, you know, they're rated on FIFA like 73 or above, you're like, yeah, we got a player here. You know, like just understanding, just figuring out where it all fits in, I think is immensely interesting. I want to switch gears, Chris, and get off the topic of players and talk about, we talked about the January thing, and a thing that popped to my mind was the FA Cup. And in this midst of this four game league unbeaten run, we did lose the FA Cup replay to Crewe Alexandra quite handily, I would suspect. I don't want to get your opinion on this, Chris, but this might be a little controversial. I understand the magic of the FA Cup. I understand how important the FA Cup is. I've been to FA Cup games. Like, it's fantastic. It's wonderful. But in all honesty, Chris, I'm kind of pleased that we're out the FA Cup at the first round, because it's just a bunch of, you could potentially play three or four extra games. And let's be honest, Derby's not going to win the FA Cup. And I'm not going to say there's no point in being in it if you're not going to win it, but, and they're good aspects to having a cup run, confidence, making sure players can get things, gate money, TV money, playing a big Premier League team under the lights. I understand it. But I think for the position that Derby's in with the squad that we have, with not going to say the frailties that we have, but we have shoots of green grass coming through, not a full lawn at the moment. You bothered that we're out the FA Cup? Because I'm certainly not, because we're not going to win it. And just kind of a bunch of extra games. What are your thoughts? Are you like, obviously everyone loves and enjoys a cup run, but what are your thoughts on, are you like devastated that we were out the FA Cup, or are you just kind of have a lot of apathy and don't care?
Yeah, I think it was more the manner of it.
Right.
You know, so I think if we'd have, you know, drawn somebody in our own league and got beat narrowly away or something like that, or put a reserve team out and got beat, you know, you would have gone, yeah, okay, and we would have said all the things that you just said. And I think it's just the manner of it, wasn't it? You know, kind of, and it was also in that whole kind of, you know, the your football is shit period, you know, where that was coming out like every game, and it was coming out on the TV, and it wasn't cool. And, you know, that game at Derby in the replay, we played our first team and we were completely outplayed. I think, and they played good football and they were just better than us on the night. So I think kind of big picture, yeah, I get it. I don't think kind of probably the finance people at the club were probably overjoyed, because you actually get money for qualification, don't you? And, you know, we got Bristol Rovers at home in the next round, which was eminently winnable. You know, bit of momentum as well. So now we have another blank Saturday. But yeah, you know, if I think, to be fair, the double of what was the cup formerly known as the Pizza Cup, and the league will do me. So, I think it was more the manner of it than anything else. I mean, I'm not wounded, and the Pizza Cup rolls on, and we'll see how we go with that. But yeah, the double of promotion and the Wembley appearance in that is definitely still on.
Yeah, and the Bristol Street Motors Trophy, we were drawn against Fleetwood Town in the second round at home. So the Cod Army will be visiting. No word yet if they will bringing their cod head shaped fish mascot to Pride Park, which I just think is hilarious because you see it and you're like, this is just weird. Like, mascots are weird in general. And that one's just really weird because it's just a giant fish head on a guy. Bizarre. Anyway, so they're going to be rolling up to Derby on December, the next game, actually.
On Tuesday.
Yeah. So like you said, we're off on Saturday. So, you know, like you say, Chris, you want to keep the momentum going and things like that. But again, when you look in terms of load management and things like that, maybe a 3 or 4 day, 5 day break in between games, you know, allows players to rest, spend time with their families, get the not only the physical energy back, but the emotional and mental energy as well that can be required for another push. And the good thing is we've got no more international breaks coming up until March. So thank God for that. And we're entering a very busy festive period because we've got, you know, Leighton Orient and then Wickham and then Lincoln, Wigan and Oxford to finish out the year. So should be exciting times, ahead. And then we'll go into that very important transfer window. And then I believe we do have another break for the FA Cup. We won't have a game. Maybe not. We might have a game that won't be rescheduled, but that's okay. That's fine. We don't need extra. We're not going to win the FA Cup. We don't need it. And I'd be happy with you. We can have an open top bus parade as we win the League One title and or promotion at Wembley and win the Bristol Street Motors Trophy, a cup that I've always wanted to win since it was aptly named the Bristol Street Motors Trophy just a couple of weeks ago. Because after that, I was all into the Papa John's Pizza Trophy. Like, I was going to get pizzas and everything. Like, it's just gone now. It's just gone. Chris, I think we've talked enough about Derby County for this evening, for this week's podcast. We've covered pretty much everything. Thank you very much for spending the evening with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, awesome. As I always say, I always enjoy it. And yeah, you're more than welcome.
And that's all we've got for this week, everyone. If you haven't tuned in, please be sure to listen to our 200th episode special where I sat down with Sam Winnell to discuss his career in football, what it's like being out of work he's currently out of work as a footballer, what that's kind of like for him. And then also his time at Derby, including a boys' night out in Dubai that the coach didn't know about. But that's okay. That's all in the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. And as always, we really appreciate your support. Thank you so much. For listening and being a part of this. We thoroughly enjoy doing it. And I know I speak for Jason as well. This is we're incredibly lucky to be able to do just over 200 episodes and do this. So thank you so much for your support. You make it what it is, and we appreciate it. And with that, there's only one last thing to say, and that is up the Rams.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.